Hello and welcome to another episode of the Long Ball Football Podcast, a weekly podcast by two brothers about all things football in Portugal. You're listening to myself, Albert, and as always, I'm joined by my brother, Barney. How are you doing, Barney? How's things?
Yeah, I'm good, man. I feel like both our international breaks, I feel like you had the better one. You had a little bit of England-Brazil and then a really nice non-league game. Did you go to Walthamstow FC, which I think, if I'm right, is the only kit we've both got. I was just trying to think about our kit collections, and I think Walthamstow FC might be the only one we've both got that's the same kit.
Yeah, I did tweet about this. I wasn't sure whether people would be interested because it wasn't strictly related, but I used the international break, as Barney said, to go to two games on the same day at completely opposite ends of the spectrum. In the afternoon, I went to Walthamstow FC. For context for our international listeners, Walthamstow is just the part of London that I live in, where me and Barney grew up. It's kind of on the edge of London, you know, I guess you could call it a suburb of London. And the team that the Walthamstow FC team, which does exist, I think plays in the 8th or 9th division of English football. So very, very low down. But in England, we have a great tradition of non-league football and lower league football and supporting those teams. And during the international break, when there's no Premier League games, a lot of teams do deals where you can come and watch for free and stuff. So I watched Walthamstow FC in the afternoon. And then in the evening, I went to Wembley to watch England versus Brazil, and I was watching Vinicius Junior and Jude Bellingham. So it was a really fun in the experience to do those two things in the same day. And I can say without any doubt that I enjoyed both games equally, you know. And I think it was a really interesting way of looking at football and just what does it mean to enjoy a game of football and what do you need to enjoy a game of football. And this idea that you just need the top quality, and the more the higher up the pyramid you go, the more enjoyable the game is not true, because you can enjoy football at any level, really, which is a good job when you're covering the 7th best league in Europe.
If anybody's got a better touch than me, and like I can just enjoy that moment when they do like a nice touch, that's my enjoyment for anyone does something better than me than I can do. I'm like, oh, that's nice. And the 5-a-side the other week, I was just applauding everything.
Absolutely, and Wolves did have one Portuguese player, a player called Adalberto Pinto, who I looked him up on Transfermarkt. I don't know if he ever played in Portugal. I think he moved to the UK before he was like old enough to do. To play youth football, but yeah, that was interesting. We are going to crack straight on because Barney is having to record this on his phone, and I think he's on 49% battery.
47.
So there we go. Let's
ticking the clock.
Let's get moving before Barney's phone dies. There's actually quite a lot to discuss. There was a lot of really interesting and crazy stuff that happened this weekend. We are going to cover all the games from the big three, including that Porto game and all the stuff that happened. So bear with us. We will get to that. But we're going to start, as we always do, at the top of the table, which means once again starting with Sporting. They came from behind on Friday to beat Estrela Amadora 2-1. I think, Barney, always important to remember that they are only leading the league by 1 point as it stands. And it does mean that there is a pressure on them every game that if they slip up, they know they're going to allow Benfica back into first place. And they did go behind in this game to quite a disappointing goal. A bit of a howler from the keeper, you have to say. But they kept their composure. They kept playing their football. And they came back to win the game 2-1. We've spoken so much about Vitoriacos this season, Barney, that I think you can kind of get the impression that they're a bit of a one-man team. But I think this game was really key to showing that so many of those players contributing in so many ways. I think Trincao was great. Paulinho was great. Nuno Santos was great. Morita in midfield, I thought, was great. So that was what I took from this game, really. Lots of players who had great performances and got a really, really important win for the team.
Yeah, I mean, Trincao in particular is looking like the business at the moment. He's absolutely fantastic. I saw some people say that there's with Trincao and Edwards, there's no way that they can be in the same team. And I know they're playing the same position, both sort of left-footed, right-wingers, but I wonder if that's just that's a left-footed thing, because like I feel like if they were both right-footed, we wouldn't be perhaps saying they both can't play in the same team. Regardless, you know, Amorim's been using them both very well in terms of utilizing them when they seem to be at their peak, and Trincao seems to be getting better and better every time he starts in that 11. And he was just brilliant. You know, there's some really nice controls and lovely passes. I mean, the assist he put in was a really good ball, pressing high as well. He was absolutely brilliant. And I like him on that right-hand side with Jenny Katsumo as well. They're both, you know, when they're both there, that's a really formidable right-hand side. One player who's come in as well recently during this sort of period where they've had to utilise all of their squad, Franco Israel, the goalkeeper, who I think was definitely at fault for the goal, the Australia goal, the sort of corner which he came for and missed, and it fell nicely for the Australia player. But, you know, looking past that, there were some really good saves from him in this game, and this is a real opportunity for them. I think obviously Sporting come the summer will be looking for a goalkeeper replacement, and that's probably high on their list of sort of positions they need to improve in. I also thought Estrella looks really good from set pieces. You know, they look dangerous every time. You know, so I went to look at the statistics. I'm expecting to see the majority of their goals had come from set pieces, but in fact, they've scored the second least goals from set pieces this season. Then it turned out, after a bit more digging, the real statistic is that Sporting conceded 10 goals from set pieces this season, and only Casapia, Jovicent, and Estro have conceded more. So, you know, that tells you a little something as a point of weakness in the Sporting team. And then to add another statistic in the mix, but Sporting have scored the most goals from set pieces in the league this season with 14. So, and then that really threw me out, because they're obviously practicing set pieces because they're so good at them, but then they're obviously, but then maybe they're not, because they're conceding so many.
They're not practicing the right end.
I couldn't work it out quite, but something's working, something's not working there, basically, is what I'm trying to say.
Barney, my favorite thing that came out of this game, I don't know whether you spotted this. Obviously, Vitiokris didn't score in this game. He's made a name of scoring in most games. And I think it's fair to say that Estrella defender Miguel Lopez was particularly proud of his performance against Gyökeres, because he took to Instagram, despite his team losing, to do a post where he said, and he's written this about himself in third person, where he says, "Where are you, Victor?" in Miguel Lopez's pocket, despite losing the game. I just thought that was so funny. I love that.
I think that's becoming a bit of a theme. I think Ferenc is a similar thing when they played Sporting. Like, maybe that's just the mark of a sort of good centre back performance in this league. Is at least he didn't do the pictures, is he? Is it like a meme where he's like getting home? And
I just thought it was absolutely shameless. He's not even drawing the game. Incredible. Barney, I think let's move on to another game, as we are conscious of time, and I think the Sporting game was probably the least interesting of all the games this weekend. Let's touch on Benfica, because slightly more chaos, as I alluded to in this game. They did beat Chaves 1-0 at home, despite what I would describe as their best efforts to embarrass themselves. They missed technically 3 penalties in one game, including a penalty which had to be taken twice by Arthur Cabral, and he missed it both times. In the end, it was that same person who stepped up time and time again for them all season, João Neves, not only the youngest, but also the smallest man on the pitch. And he scored a header to give Benfica a 1-0 win. And I wanted to ask you, how many times have we spoken about João Neves this season in that way? How many times has this guy been the difference maker for Benfica? And at such a young age, I'm not even tired of talking about him yet. I think he's such a fantastic footballer.
Yeah, he's got that mentality, it seems. And you know, the only person I'm putting him on par with is Di Maria in this Benfica team. You know, those are the two people that they've seemed to rely on so many times this season. João Neves just seems to be getting better and better, and is such a key player. We shouldn't forget his age. We shouldn't forget how short his time has been in the starting 11 with Benfica. He's really going to be one of the part. I think I saw a rumour of Manu coming in for 100 mil. I think that we're just going to see countless rumours like that for him up until the summer, until he might move, or maybe he might feel he's got the time to stay another season. I think he certainly has. Nothing saying he could be here next season being the Benfica captain. You know, he's that sort of player. Di Maria is another one as well, Albert. Like, I was just thinking, like, how how much they have relied on him so much this season. And when he arrived, I didn't really think he would be so vital in so many of their wins. You know, and then also I was thinking maybe whether they would be in a better position without him, because perhaps a player like Koshy might play further forward in the team. And anyway, I was going to talk again about this sort of midfield combination, the double pillar. It was following Florentino and Neves has been the one Schmidt's gone for recently. You get that more stability with Florentino and perhaps better pressure, but there's lack of, they also lack something in sort of the early build up of their attacks. And perhaps we saw that in this game, because Shavs are probably maybe Vizela, apart from Vizela, the worst team in this league. And it did feel a little bit like this was a Benfica performance where, as you said at the beginning, they had to rely on a bit of magic from Jean Neves and Di Maria. Like, there wasn't there able to sort of tear this team apart despite playing a really strong team. You had David Neres coming into the attack, Rafa behind Cabral. It's just, you know, and I feel like I've talked a lot about the sort of the midfield options for Benfica, so that's probably quite a boring topic to discuss. But going back to your sort of original point, it does feel like it's just those two players, isn't it, that Benfica just rely on so often this season, and Di Maria and João Neves, whereas last season we were seeing so many players have real moments throughout the season, be that João Mario or, you know, or Rafa. So yeah, it's same old Benfica, and not what you want at this point of the season. You want to be getting convincing wins, and especially against Chavs.
I mean, you can't talk about Angel Di Maria in this game without talking about possibly the worst penalty I've ever seen since we've been doing this podcast. I thought it was an absolutely terrible, you know when people say, I could have scored that. Oh, my grandma could have scored that. And you think, yeah, whatever. I genuinely think I could have saved that penalty. I think I would have had a good chance of saving it. It was so bad. Like, the keeper had so lot time to react. It was unbelievable. I mean, the whole penalty situation was farcical. And then you've got Arthur Cabral up the other end of the pitch in the second half. He takes a penalty. It's another really terrible penalty to the bottom left corner. Exactly the same as Angel Di Maria. The keeper saves it. They then pull it back like a minute later because Shav's players encroached into the box. They make him take it again, and he misses the same penalty. It's the same one. He does exactly the same thing. Like, I thought it was an absolute joke. Although I do think, if you're being fair, that, you know, Benfica, they did create a lot of good chances, and I think it probably would have been harsh if they didn't get the win. They did have, I did, you know, I like to look at this stuff. They did have an XG of 3.67 compared to Shav's 0.56, although that does include, I believe, two penalties that will contribute to those stats. But they just made it so much harder than they needed to be, Bonnie. I think that's what's particularly unhelpful at this stage of the season, when so many people at the club and so many of the fans are so on edge. And, you know, just a nice, easy win against bottom of the table Shav's would have been just what they needed, but they made it so much harder for themselves than it needed to be.
Well, two things. I think I respect the fact that they went with my method of not having apparently the same penalty taker twice in the game. So I like that. So, and then also maybe extra props to Arthur Cabral for going in the same spot.
It's mind games, isn't it? It's mind games.
We've got to find the person, if there was a person who had Hugo Souza as their captain in their fantasy team. Maybe, yeah, there was someone out there. I don't know. But yeah, he's this keeper, isn't he? He came with quite a big fee, I think. And to be fair, he's had a few okay performances and some good penalty saves in this one. I think the thing I take out of this game, Albert, is, you know, looking at that 11, which you probably would say is their strongest 11, perhaps Antonio Silva coming in for Tomas Araújo. But this strongest 11, this sort of performance, when you've got big games up against Sporting coming up, you know, this is not exactly not what you want, and it's the issue we found. We just, Schmidt hasn't been able to get this team to sort of play any sort of dangerous or exciting football for a while now, compared to what he was doing last season.
Yeah, it's definitely becoming an issue. Quick battery check before we move on.
39,
plenty of time. We might need a lot of that, Barney, to discuss the next game. I don't think we can avoid it any longer. I think it's time to talk about one of the craziest games of the season so far, as Porto fell to a surprise 1-0 loss away to Estoril, a game with three red cards, a controversial penalty decision, and some seriously unsavoury antics throughout and after the game. A game which led to a coordinated statement being released by all Porto players in protest to refereeing decisions made during the game, something we're going to come on to shortly. Let's try and dig through it all, Barney. And I think, as always, let's start with the game itself, which, let's not forget, in my opinion, saw one of Estoril's most complete performances that we've seen under Vasco Ciabra, and a very impressive game where I think it's fair to say Estoril possibly could have scored even more than just the one goal that they got.
Yeah, they looked they're just really good. Rodrigo Gomes playing sort of fight slightly forward, one of the sort of three attackers, really was quite effective. You know, we saw his attacking skills that we've seen all season when he was playing sort of right wing back come into fruition with that more advanced role. Matheus Fernandes as well, the midfielder on loan from Sporting, had another really impressive display, you know, in doing all things across the pitch as a midfielder would have to do, defensive actions, playing a full forward, lovely. Dealing with pressure well, he was really good. And his midfield partner, Zanocello as well, a Brazilian midfielder who they brought in January from a relegated Santos. He looks like a really good acquisition, you know, to sort of fill the gaps left by Coindridi and then the injured Holsgrove. You know, he's been a really good player coming in. And so, yeah, and I think João Basso is having a real impact on that back line as well. We shouldn't overlook him as well. Another player from Santos, actually. It's the sort of performance we felt was coming for a while. And Estoril seem to be this bogey team for Porto, don't they? I think from memory, they've had a few issues. I think I saw that they're one of the only teams to beat them twice in a season. I think, is that right? Home and away?
Did they knock them out of the Taça da Liga? I'm not sure.
I was thinking that as well, yeah. They seem to have their number, which is a bit of a surprise for it seemed the way, well, where Porto are on the table, where Estoril are on the table. So yeah, I think it was a good performance and quite just. And well, I'll let you talk about Estoril before we move on to Porto, because I'd be interested to hear what you thought of them.
Yeah, no, I haven't got much to add other than the thing that, like I said, for me, Estoril's most complete performance under Ciabra. But the most pleasing thing, like what you mentioned, was the fact that they defended well, because we've had conversations about Estoril recently where the defending was really poor. I'm thinking back to they were 3-0 down against Vitória at home at halftime and all that kind of stuff recently. So that was, for me, the most pleasing thing was that not only were they effective on the counter-attack, not only were they brave enough to create chances against a big team, those are the characteristics that we already know about Vasco Ciabra teams. But they had been defensively very frail. And for me, it was Vasco Ciabra, arguably man of the match, in my opinion. That meant that they were kind of much, much more defensively strong in recent weeks. And they benefited from it.
Can I just add as well, finally, on Cassiano? I'm trying to draw comparisons to perhaps a more household name, maybe like a Premier League striker, that sort of striker who was never at a big club but is so effective and so useful as a player, you know, chips in with important goals, chips in regularly, chips in to sort of just guide teams. You know, think of when he was at Vizzetto and now he's doing it again at Estoril. Just a real handful for any defender, really, because of his physicality and his you know, what he can do. But he's also very, very classy as well. You know, he gets smart finishes. I really want to get a comparison now. I can't.
I'm thinking Danny Welbeck at Brighton.
Yes, I like that.
Yeah, he's the we're given that, the Portuguese Danny Welbeck. well, look, the first half was fairly even, but as I alluded to, and as I'm sure people are aware, it kind of, the game began to descend a little bit into chaos in the second half. The problems for Porto started, well, one of the main problems they had was a red card for Diogo Costa. It was a poor back pass under pressure from Ottavio, kind of looping back pass. Diogo Costa tries to control it, miscontrols it, gives the ball to, I believe it was Wagner for Estoril, and brings him down with a clear open goal, denies a clear goal scoring opportunity. And it's a red card. Estoril scored the resulting free kick, which I have to say, they got a healthy deflection. Cassiano, as you said, the guy who scored the goal. But I was pleased to see that go in because I think they deserved the goal, seeing as Diogo Costa quite literally denied them an open goal. But it was kind of downhill from there for Porto. And I think it's something that we've seen before. The pressure started to build, and they couldn't handle it. They handled it very badly, and they allowed the pressure to get on top of them. And I think particularly Barney, someone who we've praised so much this season, Chico Conceição, responded really badly to the situation. Sent off late on for a second yellow card offence, the second of which I did actually think he was unlucky, because an Estoril player is clearly impeding him trying to take a quick throw in when they're trying to get back into the game. A situation where if he keeps a cool head and doesn't react, then it's probably the Estoril player who gets the yellow card. But his head's gone. He reacts stupidly. He puts his hand in the Estoril player's face. And I think it's an unavoidable second yellow card. I think, in my opinion, his actions, Chico Conceição's actions throughout the second half, I think, particularly towards the referee, I found quite disrespectful. And I think it was behaviour that went beyond more of the day-to-day kind of disagreements we see in football a lot between refs and players, where, you know, there are harsh words spoken between players and refs when they disagree. But I think he acted particularly in a way that was a bit over the top. And I think he probably should have been dismissed for one particular action alone. I think, I'm not going to go into it, one that people have seen a lot, the video went around on social media, which I thought was particularly disrespectful. But I think the reason I bring that up is that kind of reflects something that we've seen in Porto a lot, and I'm going to say it, under Sergio Conceição's stewardship, where when they find themselves in a game where things aren't going their way, when things aren't going to plan, when perhaps the game is against them, and there's a mentality weakness in a lot of players, which I do think comes from higher up, that can punish them. And I think they suffered from it in this game.
I think that's a thing that's sort of been rumbling a little while, Albert, which is I think that's all they've got is now to have that underdog mentality, to have that sort of we're so hard done by. I think that's the sort of only motivating factor that can fuel them. I think Conceição is very much a key to that. And because there's so many underlying problems at Porto, which I think is also, you know, why so many people are so unhappy, be that the players or the fans as well. You know, you look at their recruitment. I saw something that really caught my attention, which is the CIS Football Observatory, which I've talked about a few times, but they ranked the top 10 players from the league in terms of transfer value. And Diogo Costa, the goalkeeper, was the only player from Porto in that top 10. You know, Sporting had 5 players, Benfica had 4. And to put that into numbers, using the sort of the estimated financial value, Portugal could generate 70 mil from the sale of Diogo Costa, whereas Benfica could make 335 million from their sales, and Sporting. It's not exact, obviously, but, you know, that gives you a real sort of clue of that, how much of an issue that Porto are in terms of that financial thing. We've obviously had the elections coming up as well, and that's become a little toxic, seeing some of the sort of news stories around that. So, I just think that just seems to be something that's been used so quite often by Conceição when the team's struggling, is to sort of really try and ramp up this sort of it's us against the world sort of thing. And that really bled through into players, and it's bled through into the sort of reaction, as you said, to the social media posts from everyone. I mean, it could have been a pen, but I think, and this brings on a sort of another massive issue that perhaps we don't have time to discuss, but it does feel, and we try not to bring it up too often, do we, Al? But there is a real underlying issue in terms of the refereeing standards within this league, which is fueled by the criticism that the managers and players give them sometimes. But also, there are quite often penalties given in one game that wouldn't be given in another. The fact that this got overturned by VAR is, you know, we're getting into sort of clear and obvious stuff, aren't we? Clear and obvious errors, which I'm not sure it is. And, you know, we could talk ages for this, and people do talk ages for this, but we never really do too much as a podcast. But I think, yeah, it's unfortunately this whole game with Porto's situation and in this game is just brings up a lot of unpleasant things that this Portuguese league can offer sometimes. And yeah, I agree with what you said. I think Conchissau and it really didn't handle himself well in this game, and it just got ugly, really.
It did. I think it got ugly is the perfect way to put it. I think it is worth touching on that decision that you alluded to in slightly more depth, because obviously there was one very controversial decision during the game, which was a penalty decision between Eliakim Mangala and Chico Conchissau about an hour into the game. A penalty was originally given by the on-field referee for an incident which I can best describe as Chico Conchissau running into the box to try and get onto the end of a cross. Mangala is running to intercept him from getting the ball from a slightly different angle. Both players are running at speed. Mangala slightly behind Conchissau. They collide in the box. And depending on what angle you look at it from behind, it looks like a collision. From the front, it definitely looks like there was a hand from Mangala on the shoulder of Conchissau. The referee gave the penalty at the time, but I think the controversy comes when it was overturned by VAR, presumably because they decided it was a collision rather than a challenge. I have to say, when it was given at the time, my thought process was that I did think it was a bit harsh. I think you probably could have given the benefit of the doubt to the defender, because at the end of the day, it is two players running at speed towards the same place. They probably did just collide, as happens in football. But I think this is what you were suggesting as well. I personally don't see why VAR ruled it out. I don't think it got into the realms of a clear and obvious error. Personally, like I said, I think it would have been a harsh penalty decision. And if I was Estro, I probably would have been disappointed to see a ref give that. I would have thought, oh, maybe he could have given us the benefit of the doubt. But I would not, like I said, I personally wouldn't have overturned it as a clear and obvious mistake. But I think most importantly, and what is important to say, is that as this decision was much closer than I think what a lot of people are suggesting, it was much more, for me, of a 50-50 decision than what any of the Porto players or any Porto fans are willing to admit. Like I said, we did end up afterwards with this bizarre situation where every Porto player was sharing a pre-written statement on Instagram, essentially the gist of it saying that, you know, there's a lack of integrity in Portuguese football due to poor decision-making and refereeing, VAR and all that kind of stuff. Not something that I actually disagree with too much. I really didn't like that, though. I thought it was I didn't like it. I don't think the decision itself warranted that reaction. I think it was a much closer decision than people are admitting. I personally, if they'd given the pen, I wouldn't have complained. But that's what it comes down to for me. Portuguese football can be such a circus at times, isn't it? And I think a lot of people contribute to that. But if I'm being honest, I do think Porto and Benfica and Sporting at times, they all do it, but there's just a culture in Portuguese football of fanning the flames rather than trying to put out the fire, you know.
Yeah, I think that's right. I saw bring it back to the game as a whole. I saw a friend of the podcast, Patrick Ribeiro, put it so eloquently on Twitter. So Porto's situation at the moment, he just said Porto have left themselves at the mercy of all these fine margins so often, which I think is a great summary. And you know, you look at them, Estoril completed the game with just 101 completed passes, which is the lowest for any winning team all season. You know, Porto had the most possession in this game. Porto have had the most possession in the league as a whole, I think, which feels weird because, you know, it highlights how they have all this possession, but they don't really feel like they do much with it. There seems a lack of ideas. And when you look at players like Galeno and Conchissau and Pepe, those are all players who you want sort of to play quick or on the counter and stretch teams, but when you've got slow possession, those aren't sort of the players you want. And this sort of goes back, because we shouldn't forget, a few weeks ago we were so heaping on the praise of Porto and Conchisau in terms of their performances against Arsenal. But I think that's the issue that they found quite often. This is, and sort of go back to what I was saying about the fact that all they've got is this underdog mentality. That is when they are at their best, in some senses, when they're up against Arsenal and they've, you know, their backs against the wall, and they've got so much to fight for, and that's when it works, and that's when I feel like Porto are at their best. But when you're in the league against so many inferior teams who might be happy for you to have the ball, but, you know, let you do not much with it, that's when they seem to struggle and get frustrated, and we perhaps see this uglier side. I feel like I've been quite negative on Porto in that discussion now, but when I feel like I've also been very heaps a lot of praise on them recently. But I think I don't want people to feel like I don't respect Conchisau and Porto, but I think in these situations we do see a side which I don't agree with. On a lighter note, Albert, I don't know if you can help me out on this one. I don't know if I've been fooled. I've been done by an April Fool's joke. But is Heriberto Tavares still at Estoril? Has he left? Because I saw some stories on April 1st, and I wasn't sure if they were a joke.
I can't work it out, but surely that's a really strange thing for a club to do an April Fool's.
And he
on,
started. So, I mean, the reason I was, I haven't been able to find the truth, which is sort of highlights the issues of communication from smaller teams in Portugal in the Portuguese press. But I was just going to say I remember being critical of him in the Allianz Cup final when we watched him, but he's got 4 goals and 2 assists this season. And I think it wasn't a few seasons ago, he kept Famalicão up with like a few good performances. So it'd just be bizarre if that is true, or if it is an April Fool. So if anyone's got any information on the whereabouts of Heriberto Tavares and if he's still at Estoril, please let us know.
Well, before we move on to the next game, last thing I'll say on this, as you say, you know, a lot of negativity about Porto in this episode because, you know, they lost the game. They were quite ungracious in defeat. A lot of stuff happened, which you can't really avoid. It does that come at a time, though, Barney, when we've been talking about them playing the best football of their season, which we've been saying a long time. And anyone who's listened to this show over an extended period of time knows that we are both big Sergio Conceição fans. For me, he remains the best manager in this league at the moment. And I've said that on record before, although he is a bit of a mad bastard, if we're being honest. But the last thing I will say on this game, I don't think it's fair to suggest that Porto lost this game because of controversial decisions or because of sending offs. I think they lost this game because on the day, they were second best to Estoril, and I think that's where the credit lies. I think Estoril, like I said at the very beginning, played for me their most complete game of the season. I think it was a deserved win for them at an important time in the season when they need points. A good win for Vasco Sierra. We've seen him get these types of results before, and I think it was a deserved. If tight, I'm not saying it should have been 3-0, 4-0. It was a tight game, but I think they did edge it, and they deserved the win. Well, look, while Barney's still got some foam battery left, let's try and squeeze in a couple more games. And there was yet more drama in the Primeira Liga, this time in the Algarve, as Portimonense and Braga played out a completely mad 5-3 win for Braga. Braga were actually 5-1 ahead at one point, but two late goals for Portimonense made the scoreline look a little bit better in their favour. It was a game overshadowed by the news that Braga manager Artur Jorge is set to complete a move to Botafogo in Brazil imminently. Not something I think any of us saw coming, but it does end speculation about his future, which has been brewing recently. Something that he all but confirmed in his post-match interview that he's probably managed his last game for Braga. I just wonder, Barney, what you make of that move and Braga's future under an as yet unconfirmed new manager.
Yeah, I mean, part of me feels like it sort of sums up where Braga are this season and the fact that it's basically done now. You know, although this win and Porto's loss perhaps gave him a bit of a chance to sort of maybe close that gap and leapfrog over Porto, although I'm not sure if that will happen. In terms of Artur Jorge, it makes sense for me financially because I feel like there was a manager there in Artur Jorge, they probably would have of mind changing, and to get some money for him departing is a bit of a bonus. I also feel like it's quite nice as well for Arthur George to get that recognition. I know Pasafego who's the owner? Is it Trezor or something?
John Textor, who was linked with buying Benfica of all clubs.
Yeah, he's a bit of a
he's a character.
but the point I'm trying to make is it's nice to see him, Arthur George, get that recognition, because we shouldn't forget what he did last season. Although this season probably has been a bit of a disappointment, despite key departures to players and injuries and etc. But still, I think it's nice for Arthur George to get that recognition. But I also think it's good for Braga. People might question the timing coming the crunch end of the season, but I feel like we shouldn't sniff at 3 million. I know for a manager is pretty decent. So I don't think they could turn that down, and they obviously need some money. You know, we've seen the departure of Almirante as well. So yeah, it's a. I don't know. Do you think that's wrong of me to sort of say Braga's season's over and that sort of encapsulates it, or do you think it's a bit of a mistake to let him go?
No, I think I don't think it's an issue to let him move on. I think they were planning to do it at the end of the season anyway, so I don't see a problem with it. I think as long as things don't really capitulate and they lose that fourth place spot, I think it's not really an issue. I think obviously the next question is just who are they going to bring in, and the most obvious name linked with that position is current Arouca manager Daniel Souza, although apparently Braga are not keen on paying the requested 1 million euro compensation package for a manager who is out of contract at the end of the season anyway, something I can kind of sympathise with. I think certainly from within the league, Daniel Souza is the most exciting managerial prospect, and I think it would make sense for him to take that step up. And maybe with sort of 5 or 6 games of the season left to go, a bit of a free hit, that's a good opportunity for him to get to know his players ahead of a January transfer window, if it was to happen.
Yeah, I mean, it's been the move that's been touted for so long, hasn't it? And part of me would love to see it. Looking specifically at this game, it did feel a little bit like Arthur George has been like, oh, it's my last game, could just do what you want, lads. There was an element of that.
Yeah, it reminded me of Alex Ferguson's last game as Manchester United manager. Manchester United 5, West Brom 5.
Yeah, I mean, well, perhaps it... Yeah, the defence has been Arthur George's downfall this season, hasn't it? I mean, Portimonense have the worst attack in the league, and to score 3 against Braga isn't great. I mean, yeah, but then we also saw, you know, perhaps Braga's best in sort of the attack, and, you know, seeing Roger excel, Bruma, Banza with 2 goals once again, you know, these are all, well, all 3 of those players are just highlights, really, of Arthur George's time at Braga. You know, bringing out the best in Banza, not rushing perhaps the bringing through of Roger, and Bruma's been a real key signing, sort of came in on loan, didn't he, and was convinced to stay for another year. So yeah, I mean, specifically on Roger, because I feel like we're definitely talking about him more and more, and he was another man of the match performance in this game, and he's got quite, oh, I haven't got the stats to hand, but you know, a real high goal contribution for his minutes in recent games. One thing I absolutely love is you know, youth football Twitter, or like youth prospect Twitter, just seeing any account where they're just recommending young players, and we see quite a lot of players from the league recommended, but I feel like Roger hasn't quite hit that mark yet, and there's not much talk about him, whereas for me, maybe it's because he's a winger and compared to sort of Jarnos and Antonio or Ignacio, you know, it just feels like, well, I don't understand why he's not getting the sort of the limelight as some of the other players, because he's absolutely frightening and he's a great little winger.
Yeah, I think if João Neves and Antonio Silva weren't in the league, I think he'd probably be the most exciting young player in Portugal at the moment. I think, assuming that he sticks around, there's a possibility that they sell him in the summer, you know, because I'm sure there are people paying attention, even if the football Twitter bros aren't. I'm sure there are a lot of people paying attention to him. But assuming he does stay, I think this time next season, We could be talking about him as a really, really exciting player. And I think he is the future of Braga, should you wish to say. I did think this game, Barney, was, you know, Artur George's last game in charge, and it just absolutely summed him up to a T, didn't it? You know, some real exciting attacking football, 5 goals, you know, good attacking intent, and just some calamitous defending to concede 3 goals. So, it looks like we'll be saying farewell to Artur George after just under a season where he's not quite made the mark that perhaps he would have wanted to.
Yeah, I've got to be honest, Albert. It has been a bit of a mystery to me why this season is so bad, because I can't remember how many you had, but I certainly had, I think I had, maybe it's just Niakate, but I had one Braga defender in my team of the season last year. I know Niakate has had his issues this year, but it also feels like there isn't that much difference personnel-wise. I don't quite understand the massive drop-off, but it's, like you said, it is a blemish on Artur George's time at Braga and an issue he hasn't been able to fix this season. But like I said, it also still feels like a bit of a mystery about as to why.
Absolutely. Well, things change fast in football, and then maybe this time next week we'll be talking about a whole different setup at Braga.
Can I please talk about a young Japanese player for Portimonense?
Do you have
my
to?
Bread and butter? Tashi, I think it's called Tashi Fuki, 19-year-old. I think he's on loan from, is it Bayern Munich 2? Do you say Bayern Munich 2 or Bayern Munich B?
Zwei.
So I'm not even going to try. But he's a nice assist and a goal and a couple of bright
Absolute
moments.
Absolute banger, to be fair to the kid.
Really good goal. And I don't know. I know I've said that a few times, but they do get gems, Portsmouth, occasionally, don't they? They do, like, I do think they do get gems. But that's all it'll do all season, isn't it? But, I just thought, a bright little moment for him. And just a transfer I didn't realise had happened, you know. But that is my, like, you know, guy on loan from Bayern Munich.
Yeah.
Academy, like, yeah, great. Great moment.
And good news that Portsmouth are looking to renew Paulo Sergio's contract as manager. For anyone who's worried that he wouldn't be sticking around, that's very good news. All right, that's more than enough Portimonense praise for my liking. Let's do one last game very quickly. A game that in my preview article for Portugal.net this week I picked out as potentially one of the most interesting games outside of the top four this season. I think it really did live up to that. Well, no, perhaps not quite for the reasons I expected, but Casapia beat Vizela 4-0 away from home for their biggest ever Primeira Liga winner. And it was 4 absolute bangers as well, including a brilliant long-range strike from outside the box and a bicycle kick to boot. A great win for Casapia, a side who have been showing promising signs under their new manager, Barney, something that we've discussed before in the show.
Yeah, Gonçalo Santos. I'm getting quite interested in him. I've read a few articles today in preparation just to sort of see... try to get a better picture of him, but I just like his understanding of the team. Like he talked well about the likes of like Felipe Cardoso, who was very much playing second fiddle to Clayton, the other Brazilian striker who left in January for Brazil and had been starting to score quite consistently for Casapia. And then Felipe Cardoso, who, Gonçalo Santos sort of just said, like, as a player, he's always believed in and the club has always believed in, and he's ready there to take the place of Clayton, and he certainly did it in this game. And I to memory, Casapia have already had quite decent strikers. I think the thing we've mentioned a couple of times is sort of him just reverting back to their sort of tried and tested 3-4-3, which they used under Felipe Martins. When he was there, it's. I mean, it's two sides of the coin, because we've also got to talk about the poor performance of Vizela, but they have been looking better and better, Casapia, and they seem to be improving. And you know, as I mentioned, Cardoso was excellent, and the likes of Larrazabal as well, a really decent right wing back, getting the score sheet as well. You know, they're finding a bit of form.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, As you say, we have been making quite a few positive noises about Vizela in recent weeks. I think, you know, we've been suggesting that perhaps, you know, that win is on the horizon, that, you know, there's been good moments in games where you see what they're trying to do. I suggested, actually, I thought they could win this game, and I thought it might be the quality of a player like Samuel Asend who would make the difference. Obviously, went very wrong on the day. I think the sad thing about Vizela now is those promising signs are still there in games, but they're just really running out of time. They're running out of games to turn those promising moments into consistent performances and therefore into much needed points. So I think it's just been one thing after another for Vizela this season. You know, the manager situation has not been great. The playing squad is okay. They've had their moments, but they've never got a grip on this season, and it looks like it's they're running out of time.
Can I just say, I was so, you know, I didn't watch this game. I watched the highlights, but seeing the players that came on for Vizela, right? So Dominguez Quina, Bruno Costa, Petrov as well, the striker. Those are three players who came in January and have been the better players in that team since they arrived to make them. The fact they weren't getting starts, I mean, what, I don't understand what's going on there. Like, because Petrov definitely's got a couple of goals since January. Sorrow as well, there was Spanish winger, is another player of sort of better quality. So yeah, I don't know. Is it De La Barrera? Is he still the manager? Because I can't imagine. Yeah, unless they go for another change, I just can't. You can't really make excuses for that decision. Because you know, and I maybe that is a bit of being biased to Bruno, course, but Queen has shown great glimpses of like talent. I don't know. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, perhaps they're not doing themselves any favors. Well, look, we've just got enough time to say goodbye before Barney's phone dies on us.
Can I just explain, because people might be saying, why don't you just plug your phone in? But I've got the mic plugged in, which is why I can't plug the phone.
Exactly that. It was a choice between good audio quality or unlimited battery. I think we made the right choice. Before we go, as always, just a reminder that if you did enjoy listening to the show, to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or a star rating on Spotify. And always make sure to check out how you can become a Long Ball Football socio for just £1 a month on our Patreon page. There's a link to that in our description. There's all sorts of fun benefits, and it's a great way to support a completely independent DIY podcast. But that just leaves me to say thank you very much for listening once again, and we'll see you next week.
Yeah, see you next week.